So, a little Norwegian music, is it? I think it is a little Norwegian music to get us going here as we talk about Norwegian heritage on this show. And that's what you're going to hear. You're going to hear the history of Norwegian immigration to Wisconsin. Plus, we'll cover some genealogical research with our two guests. One of them, Jerry Grittenholm, is in charge of operations at Lifts Risa, excuse me, in Stoughton, Wisconsin. Fantastic place. He helped create this heritage center back in 2011, and I'm going to certainly hear the story about that. Jerry, welcome. Thanks for joining in today.
Yes, happy to be here.
Also with us, with a big smile on her face, Dana Kelly is the executive director of the Norwegian American Genealogical Center, and it is based in Madison. Dana has a degree in Scandinavian studies from UW-Madison and can speak, read, and write in Norwegian. Dana, welcome.
Oh, thank you so much for having us. Great to be here.
Well, it's going to be a lot of fun talking about this history. And as we talk with them and you're listening in, I hope you'll join in. Want to hear from you. Let us know how you're celebrating, maybe sitting a mai. Tell us the story of how your family came to America, maybe. Give us a call. The number is 800-642-1234, 1-800-642-1234. Or you could email us the email address talk@wpr.org. That's talk@wpr.org. Coming up on Saturday is Sitting Am I. I have a special fondness for Sitting Am I because I was born in Stoughton, and our family has a lot of ties to Stoughton, and my mother won a microwave oven in a drawing that was held on Sitting Am I. And I think it was our first one, our first microwave oven. So anyway, so that's what it kind of means to me a little bit. What does this holiday mean to Norwegians?
What does a holiday mean to Norwegian? It's about the same as our July 4th. It's their Independence Day, and we in the U.S. With the English, obviously, had a war with them to get independent. Well, the Norwegians didn't have a war. They had wars. And their getting independent was not a matter of saying to the Swedes, we want independence, because at times both the Swedes and the Norwegians were part of Denmark and part of I'm not sure if Germany was in it, France was in it, but Norway had tried and tried and couldn't gain independence. And finally, the story is that Denmark gave Norway to Sweden because they couldn't do anything with the Norwegians. And I think over time, I think the Swedes came to the same conclusion as the Danes and finally gave Norway its independence. And 1825 is their significant day, just like our July 4th, 1776 is. But 1825 is the big day, and they celebrate it just like we celebrate July 4th, only they have a bigger celebration than we do with July 4th. We have a far bigger celebration in Stoughton because of Sitting Am I than we do with July 4th.
Yeah, it's big, and it runs from it's the 16th through the 18th this year, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah.
Yeah, so how do you, just ask you both this question, and maybe start with you, Dana. How did you find a passion for studying Norwegian culture and language?
I grew up in Deerfield, which is a Norwegian-American community.
I grew up in Cottage Grove.
Well, there you go. Neighbors. Yeah, so it was, you know, when you're the fish, you don't notice the water.
Yeah.
Everybody was Norwegian in our neighborhood. Everybody, Stoughton was the big city we'd go to McDonald's or Pizza Hut. Everybody was Norwegian. And I actually fell in love with genealogy before I fell in love with Norwegian heritage specifically. In middle school, I started researching my family, and I detected that the majority of my ancestors were Norwegian. So then when I got to college, they asked me, you know, do you want to continue with Spanish? You need more Spanish to graduate anyway. And I said, well, definitely not. I don't want to do any more Spanish. And they said, well, what language do you want to learn then? And I said, do you have Norwegian? And they said, well, yeah, we can get you in Norwegian. Apparently, there's not much of a demand. So I took Norwegian for 3 years. And by then, I was halfway to a Scandinavian Studies degree. So I said, well, I might as well finish. Might as well get a major in Scandinavian Studies. And everybody made fun of that decision. They said, what are you going to do with that degree? And I didn't have a very good answer until 6 years ago when they called me and said, we're looking for a new director for the Norwegian American Genealogical Center. And so for the past 6 years, I've been the one laughing. I got to be a professional Norwegian, and they said I'd never get to do it.
Jerry, what about you?
Yeah. Nope, I don't speak Norwegian. I have enough trouble with English. And the reason I say Norwegian is in my background that I worked all over the world. England, France, Germany, Poland, Austria, Brazil, China, Japan, Korea, Malaysia, Mexico. And what I found early on was me trying to communicate in their language was the wrong thing to do. What I did was I searched out individuals that I would be working with that were very fluent in English. And I found the same thing in Norway, that in Norway, the second language, almost the first language today, is English.
Yeah.
So it doesn't matter where I go in Norway. I don't have any trouble speaking with people, especially the young people, because it's a required classes in school is English.
Yeah.
And what I found interesting was with the immigrants that come from different parts of the world, they get a lot of them from the Middle East, India, Pakistan, those countries. And when they come into Norway, if they have children, the children don't go to a Norwegian school. The children go to an international school. And in the international school, they don't learn Norwegian. The first thing they do is they teach them English, because evidently English is a little bit easier to learn than Norwegian. So when they become proficient in English, then they move them on to the Norwegian schools. So everybody that is in the schools speaks English and Norwegian, and so do the immigrants.
Yeah. Tom Loftus mentioned that. He said they don't even call it a second language. It's your other language that you have to learn, English. So
I was walking once in Oslo. They gave me a tour, and I'm walking with this older gentleman, and we're trying to communicate because some of the older gentlemen, people, aren't as fluent in English.
Mm-hmm.
And we're walking down the street, and he looks over at me, and he says, Jerry, you should learn more Norwegian. And I looked over at him, and I says, yes, but you should learn more English.
Well... The Stoughton has a special connection with its Norwegian heritage. A lot of Norwegians, I guess, must have emigrated. In fact, Tom even mentioned that a little bit in passing, that Stoughton was an area where a lot of people landed.
Yeah. What we call the Koshkonong Prairie. It's the southeast portion of Dane County, some into Jefferson County, some into Rock County. But the immigrants came there. Some of them had to work for other immigrants to begin with. Some of them came with skills that they could do things, whether they're carpenters or teachers or even clergy. And so when they came, They settled in that Kashkanan Prairie, and that's what Lift's Rice started out as. Our goal was not to learn about Norwegian history, but more about the immigration that came from Norway during the early middle 1800s. And that's our focus also today, that most of the stories that we have to tell in Lift's Rice are about actual Norwegian immigrants at the time. And some struggled, some prospered, some went back to Norway, and some moved on to Washington on the Pacific Coast.
Well, I want to get more into that, but I want to get Dana involved on the... You're executive director of the Norwegian American Genealogical Center. What kind of work do you do at the center?
We have a library, so if you want to come in and do some genealogical research, learn more about Norwegian American communities here in the United States, we have a lot of, we have about 12,000 items on our shelves that are about that particular subject. We also offer classes. So if you're not sure how to get started with your genealogy, you can take some classes with us. We have Norwegian language classes, too. Every Wednesday and Thursday morning, we have students in our conference room learning Norwegian language. And we also have services, too. So if you have a pile of letters in your closet or a diary or something that's in Norwegian and you'd like it translated to English, that's the type of thing.
That.
Yeah, we can take a look at that. We also do the research for you. So if you get started and say, you know what, this is not for me, but I sure would like to have the answer at the end of the journey, we have researchers who can do the research for you if you're interested in that.
Luke in Central Wisconsin has a question. Let's go there. Hi, Luke.
Hey, Larry, thank you very much for taking my call.
Sure.
As always, a very interesting show.
Thank you.
I thought I heard you guys talking about it might be the Norwegian Independence Day or close to.
Yeah.
I was wondering if your lady guest, I forget her name, I'm sorry. If she could maybe recite, if they have an anthem like the United States does, if she could recite that in Norwegian, I thought that'd be cool.
Oh,
that's called Javielsker.
Javielsker. Yeah. Okay. I don't know if I can say it. I may have to sing it.
Well, go ahead.
I don't know if I can get all the words.
Sing it. Sing it for us, Dana.
This was not an expected question, so I did not prepare for that. But let's see here. It goes, Ja, vi elsker dette landet som det stiger frem. Før det var blitt over vannet med de tusen hjem. Elsker, elsker deg og tenker på vår far og mor. Og den saga natt som senker drømmer på vår jord. Og den saga natt som senker, senker drømmer på vår jord.
Wow!
That was really, really good.
That was really, really good.
Well, thank you. I started a little too high, but that's okay. Close enough. You got the idea. And well, I think I got all the words.
And it's got that kind of regal, sound that you expect from a kind of a national anthem.
Too. Yeah. And I think it's easier than ours. Easier to sing.
Yeah. Yes.
Ours is hard.
How many thousands times have we sung it? And I always... it's hard to sing ours. So the meaning, of course, is we're proud Norwegians and we're
Yeah, it was a poem that was set just like our national anthem. It was originally a poem that was set to music, and that's just one verse. I think there's 10 verses to
oh
their that poem, and that's the only one I know. Don't ask for any more. But the first line is "Yes, we love this land," and it's about loving their country and being connected to the land. Yeah.
Dana Kelly is executive director of the Norwegian American Genealogical Center based in Madison. Jerry Grittenholm is in charge of operations at Lifsreisa. I don't know. I said that many, many times before the show, and I said it right most every time. And, of course, now when I get on the air, I can't say it right. Lifsreisa. In Stoughton, and we're going to learn some more about that. I'm Larry Mueller. You're listening to WPR News. Great to have you along today on WPR News as we take a look at how Norwegian heritage is thriving in Wisconsin with our two guests, Dana Kelly, Executive Director of the Norwegian American Genealogical Center based in Madison, and Jerry Grittenholm is in charge of operations at Lifsreisa in Stoughton, Wisconsin. It's a really cool thing. We're going to learn some more about that as we move along. You can join in. Questions or comments, maybe an experience to share. I hope you will join in. Number's 800-642-1234, or you could email us to talk@wpr.org. Jerry, let's talk about Lifsreisa for a few minutes here. What does Lifsreisa mean, by the way?
It means life's journey. Lifsreisa is not a word in Norwegian. We didn't want to call it the Stoughton Norwegian Heritage Center or something like that. So the zebra dog who we were working with the design for the programs and that came up with an idea, we'll invent the word. So the word that they invented was Lifsreisa, and it means life's journey.
That's very cool. And the structure, what are people going to see if they come to Stoughton?
One of the things that we decided early on was that we did not want to be a museum, that we wanted it to be about people and immigration. So with the help of Zebra Dog, who is kind of out of the box kind of a company in terms of doing development programs, that we worked with them, and where they suggested things that we can do this with a picture, we can do that with a picture, and my idea was, if we can do this with a picture, why can't we do this with a computer? We can do so much more. So the whole of the interior, we have Norwegian culture, whether it's dance, music, arts, mythology, presentations that we've made that we wanted to keep, and we have actual stories from individuals that had ancestors in the Kashkanan Prairie, and we have what we call the Plan Your Journey, where you can, it's all computerized, and it's a 33-section screen that's absolutely huge.
Yeah.
But you can do a minor program to tell whether you want to come by boat or steamboat, or if you had a hobby or a work or different aspects of your life, and you would do the panel, and it would develop a journey for you. And the journey would take you from someplace in Norway and the whole trip to the ocean, sometimes to England, across the ocean to Boston, New York, or Chicago, Milwaukee, and then from those locations, then you'd be on your own, and you'd be in soon the Kashkanan Prairie. Now, a lot of these people that came had nothing but a trunk, or some of them, as they said, by the time they got to the Koshkonong Prairie, had little more than the clothes on their back. So what was, I think, great about the Norwegian immigration for those that came as time went on was how the original people, Norwegians that came, took in the new immigrants, helped them along, and got them on their way. And like I said a little earlier, the Koshkonong Prairie is where our focus is. But a lot of the Norwegians moved on, to Minnesota, North and South Dakota, all the way out to the state of Washington. They probably would have gone farther, but they didn't have a boat.
So ran out of space, ran out of land.
Well, someone right. to Alaska.
Yeah. So yeah, they went up. They went north. Well, this Lift Rice building is absolutely fantastic. Dana, you've been there.
It's beautiful.
Yeah, we were fortunate at the Bryant Foundation that Janet Bryant, who was really the benefactor for the Bryant Foundation, left all of her money, left her estate to the Bryant Foundation. And we wanted to do something that would be lasting forever for Janet Bryant. And what we came up with was the Heritage Center. Now, I maybe asked too many questions about it, and pretty soon I was in charge of it.
That often happens in life.
But not knowing what to do, I set out to educate myself, and I went to different Norwegian settlements that are already in the area, up at Norskadalen, up in Coon Valley, over the Giants of the Earth, over in Spring Grove, Minnesota. One of the big ones I got to was Vesterheim in Decorah, Iowa.
Oh, wow. That's a big one.
Yeah, and I even went to the Swiss Center in New Glarus, Wisconsin, and I went to the Italian Center in Milwaukee, and all to kind of educate myself on, you know, what are other people doing. But I think the biggest thing I learned was, what would they do if they could do it over? Mm. How would they change it? And that, I think, was the bigger part of my education, was things I should avoid that they did that now they can't change. So,
well, it is a fantastic facility. It's just beautiful facility. And, you know, it's kind of unlike Oslo now. Oslo is kind of a gleaming, all glass operation anymore.
That was one of my primary focuses, because I had been to Norway and Oslo and Bergen. And what I didn't want it to look like a log cabin.
Yeah.
I didn't want it to look like the glass and steel structures in Oslo. I wanted something more moderate, and the moderate was Bergen. And the riverfront, oceanfront in Bergen. And their building is kind of a takeoff on that. And how did I get the approval to do that? Well, I went to a design firm, architects in Cedarburg, and because I learned from them from Vesterheim, and said this, showed up, didn't have an appointment, showed up and sat down with these people, and I think they thought I was kind of nuts, but got them to understand what we wanted to do. And so they went to work and did this design, and they took it to the board, and the board said, no, we aren't going to do this. This is too expensive. So, okay, I went back to the architectural firm, and I says, tone it down and way down. So I come back to the board, and the board says, we don't like this neither. Go build the building. So we were able to go back to the art deck and tell them to go ahead and do it, and that we would fund the building. but the building had to be of a nature that it like I said, not Oslo, not log cabin, moderate, but it had to be a forever building. We wanted it to be old immigrant, but it had to be a forever building, and that's what we have.
And that's what you do have. It's an exciting structure when you walk into it. The main area where people are going to be viewing things is enormous. High ceilings, beautiful structure inside and out, for that matter. Paul in Hurley has something for us. Let's go there. Hi, Paul.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. I was fortunate enough to visit relatives over in Scotland 3 summers ago out on the Orkney Islands. So I had Ancestry.com done to see what my percentage was of Scottish, and I found out I had more Norwegian in me than Scottish. So when did the Orkneys switch over to being Scottish?
Your ancestors must have run into the Vikings. They traveled around a lot.
Dana, you got anything for Paul on that too?
The Orkneys were part of Norway, and I don't remember. It's been hundreds of years, but their language in the Orkneys is very heavily influenced by Scandinavian languages. So I'm not surprised if your heritage, if your ancestors were on those islands for many generations, they probably came from Norway first. Icelanders, too, they often, their DNA, when they take a test, often shows that they're Norwegian, not Icelandic, because that's the same population settled both of those places. So I can't say I'm surprised. But yeah, that was part of Norway, I want to say, till about 700 years ago. So, but don't quote me on that. That's just my recollection.
Oh, Paul, thanks for calling. Appreciate it. Doug emailed us wondering if you could talk about the 1852 Hauge Historic District Park in the town of Perry, west of Madison in Dane County. It has the original 1852 Norwegian log church on it, the original Norwegian cemetery, and 3 miles of hiking trails. There's a handicapped restroom, and a park has a fantastic view with the second highest public observation point in Dane County, and that's the Hauge Historic District Park.
I know nothing about that.
Okay, well, I can take some of this here. So the Haugians, that was a dissenting group of Lutherans in Norway in the early 1800s. There was a movement founded by Hans Nielsen Hauge, and he was a lay preacher. And at that time in Norway, it was illegal to preach Christianity if you were not officially ordained by the Lutheran Church. And he did some time in jail, but that didn't deter him. And his movement spread, especially in the western part of Norway and those rural communities there. And a lot of them, when they immigrated to this country, brought that less formal religious belief with them. And they founded a few different Haugian congregations. There used to be one in Deerfield, where right along Highway 12 and 18 between Deerfield and Cambridge. The cemetery's still there, but that church is gone. But yes, there was one out in Perry, too, that were those less formal, less highbrow Lutheran churches, where it was part of their belief system was that everybody should be able to lead a Bible study if they were familiar with the contents of the Bible. So that was what that church was all about. It was more of like church of the people kind of church. And yeah, thankfully that old church has been preserved. It's one of it's probably the oldest Haugian church left in the United States, I would guess. I don't know that for sure, but as old as it is, I think it probably is the oldest one.
So the tradition, I mean, that's a tradition, not really a tradition, sort of an anti-tradition. What were the traditions, maybe you could both comment on this, some of the traditions that the Norwegians brought with them from Norway to Wisconsin?
Well, part of what we understand with that was they were very caring people, and when the immigrants came, that the ones before them, or even the farm communities, rural communities, opened their arms up to these new immigrants, because if you go back far enough, they all came for the same reason. They came because they wanted a better life. There were many, many reasons why a lot of people in Norway will never have a better life. And I think a good example of that is that if you grew up on a farm and say there's five children, the way the rules were was that eventually when Ma and Pa had to pass on, that the oldest in the family got the farm. Now, what happens with the other four? Yeah. If you were a female, you had to probably marry somebody that was going to inherit a farm. But the males, they really had nothing, so they came to America.
And the interesting thing was, and Tom Loftus mentioned this too, the immigrants brought what they learned farming. They came here to be farmers or whatever, you know, whatever profession they had, but a lot of them came to be farmers. I can tell you one thing they brought, and I have had the opportunity at many a Lutheran church in our area to partake of lutefisk and lefse.
Lutefisk is, you know, really a dried cod, and that fishermen, when they went out on the ocean to do the fishing, they couldn't take fresh food with them because they'd be gone for a long time. So they had this salted cod. And to make it edible, in Stoughton anyways, that you'd put it in a lye barrel and you had to soak it, and you could make a nice meal out of it. But you could also make a terrible meal out of it.
Yeah.
If you cooked it too much, it turned to jelly. I grew up with lutefisk, and I've had good lutefisk, and I've had not so good. But the lefse, you can't destroy lefse.
You can't destroy, especially you put a little cinnamon and butter on it. That was my experience, too. Jerry, there were some good ones, and then there were some that were, you kind of knew when you walked through the doors what it was going to be like by the aromas that were emanating from the kitchen area. And some of them were pretty darn good, and some of them were, I am going to concentrate on the lefse this time. And take a small amount of the lutefisk just to be polite.
Yeah. Well, and a family tradition was we had lutefisk and lefse every Christmas. And the best thing that happened with the lutefisk at Christmas was that my older brother took over cooking the lutefisk and got my mother out of cooking lutefisk. Then lutefisk got to be okay.
Oh, man. So lutefisk and lefse for sure. I don't know how many lutefisk dinners we went to at various churches around Cottage Grove. I think we were in Deerfield, too, for one or two. I guess part of it, even if the food wasn't good, the conversations...
It was always good.
The conversations were always good. You know what? We're going to take a reminder, give you a little reminder here that our guests today are Dana Kelly and Jerry Grentenholm. We're talking with them about Norwegian culture and history. Here's Sit and Amai coming up this weekend. It seems like a perfect time to be doing it, and a perfect time for you to be listening to WPR News. Talking about Norwegian heritage, it's still thriving in Wisconsin with our two guests, Dana Kelly from the Norwegian American Geological Center based in Madison, and Jerry Grittenholm, who is in charge of operations at Lifsreisa in Stoughton. Great to have them along. And again, you can join in 800-642-1234. We have a Wisconsin Life piece recording that I think fits perfectly into the show. You're going to hear from McKenna Shearer. McKenna shared a story she called the largest gathering of Norwegians in northwestern Wisconsin, probably, she says, Geary Fest. She told it at a live storytelling event hosted by WPR's Wisconsin Life and Chippewa Valley Writers Guild. It was held November 14th, 2024, in Eau Claire at the Lakely. Let's hear it.
About 150 years ago, a couple of Norwegians, Sivert Geary and Ingeborg Male, emigrated from Norway to the United States, and by 1920 had settled with their family in Dunn County. Sivert and Ingeborg had four sons and two daughters. From then on, you know how it goes. Those kids got married and had kids of their own, and the cycle repeated until it got to my dad. He met a gal with a big laugh and a bigger heart, my mom, and in 2000, yours truly popped out. Well, I'm pleased to report that 150 years later, the Gearys are now, and maybe always have been, a bunch of loudmouth Norwegians. I think they taught me my first curse word, and my family knows how much I love those. It's cackling women who showed me I never needed to be silent or make myself small, and the quieter Geary men who have always worked with their hands and loved their family. But a room can get pretty stuffy when it's filled with a family as big as ours, so the Gearys started having family get-togethers outdoors. One of those first planned family reunions was called Geary Fest. For the past near 20 years, my great-aunt Jayette and great-uncle Larry Geary have been hosting that family reunion at their Dunn County homestead. Annually, they welcome 70-plus loud-mouth family members for Labor Day weekend when Geary Fest is held. In my 24 years, I don't remember ever missing one year of Geary Fest. Through rain and humidity, Gearys show up. I think that kind of commitment to Geary Fest is because of three things. There are two Midwestern potluck-style meals in one day. Hey. The Hestisco Tournament, and because Great Aunt Jayette said so. And I'm sure most of you are curious, what's Hestisco? Hestisco translates from Norwegian to English as horseshoes, the game. Traditionally, people play horseshoes with horseshoes. Gearys don't do that. We use washers. And no, I've never won. My dad has, though, twice, so it's in my blood. Nowadays, my favorite part of the reunion is the silent auction. Every family that comes aims to bring at least one thing for it, and the money raised goes right back to the Geary Fund. Those funds cover the cost of hosting Geary Fest, but it's also a family fund. We've donated to family members with cancer. We've given money to members to go on mission trips. And my great uncle Larry added, don't forget about the headstones. Headstones? The whole reason Geary Fest even exists is because of those Norwegians who emigrated to America 150 years ago, but for a long time, the family didn't even know who was all part of our family tree. Great Aunt Jayette came across a headstone one day while visiting a Dunn County cemetery, and all it contained was three words, Mother, Father, Geary. When she asked my great uncle Larry, who was laid to rest there, he said, well, I don't know, men. So for the past couple of decades, Great Aunt Jayette has made it her mission to not only identify the names of our Geary ancestors, but also to get to know them. She has so many stories of poring over archives of publications that no longer exist, through marriage certificates, and she's even stumbled across a couple of vintage wares at thrift sales that had the name Geary written on them. Frankly, I haven't appreciated all of that work and all of that history until recently, but I should have. I don't know who I would be if I didn't grow up in Wisconsin. And I don't know who I would be without the Gearys. I don't think I'd be a loudmouth, cursing, hardworking woman if I didn't spend every Labor Day weekend at Geary Fest. But I do know one thing. For the Gearys, Ufta means family. Thank you.
Oh, very nice. You can catch Wisconsin Life Stories, by the way, on WPR News and WPR Music every Wednesday and Friday and online at any time on wisconsinlife.org. So, Dana, I'll turn to you because a lot of it had to do with genealogy in a way. What'd you think?
Yeah, it's a cute story, but the whole time I'm dying to know how Geary is spelled, because I'm guessing that in Norway it wasn't pronounced that way.
It was, it was, I think, spelled, well, G-I-E-R-E.
Okay.
But it also might have been I can't imagine it was G-E-A-R, G-I-E-R-E.
Probably not, yeah. Yeah, it was probably, a name of a farm in Norway that the family chose to use for a last name when they got here.
Is that how it worked? You got to choose your own name when you got here?
Well,
pretty much.
Yep, I think my father's side kept the name because I've been to the Grittenholm farm in Lena, Norway, which is by Jovik, which is our Stoughton sister city. So I've been there. I have the sheet that's about 3 feet wide and 4 feet long of the history of the family all the way back to the 1400s.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah, and I'm still looking for myself.
Do you ever work with Dana on this or somebody?
Yeah, well, I was going to bring up that... Dana and I's relationship is that we're integral to each other's programs. When we did the Lifts Risa, that one of the things that we have in there is we have a genealogy center, but ours is education, hers is research and education. So we work together. And we, in our genealogy center, we have direct access to the NACES programs, which helps us tremendously from a space standpoint. And if somebody wants additional information, again, they just contact the NACES library. But we do genealogy there, too. But we're not a research organization. We're more of the education.
Yeah. Skip and Milton has something for us, maybe along a different line, but maybe not. Let's go there. Skip, hi.
Hi. Great show. I'm switching gears a little bit in that there is an American Birkebeiner from Cable to Hayward every year. It's a world lappet race. Each country can only have one world lappet, and the World Lappet for the United States is right here in Wisconsin, but it's patterned after the Norwegian Birkebeiner, which started 97 years ago or so, or close to 100. But that was the Norwegian Birkebeiner goes over the same route that Prince Haakon was rescued by the two Birkebeiners. That Birk is. Norwegian for birch bark or birch, and they had birch bark leggings to keep the snow out. They carried that prince, the two-year-old prince, up over the mountain, and that's where the Norwegian Birkebeiner goes, over a good-sized climb up the mountain and down the other side, 55 kilometers, 34 miles, and... they rescued the prince. He likely would have died had that not happened.
And you guys are familiar with that story, I'm pretty sure, Dana?
Yes. Yeah, that's a pretty popular legend.
We look at the Birkebeiner over here because they have it in northern Wisconsin, but there's a big difference. The Birkebeiner in Wisconsin is pretty much flatlanders. In Norway, it's real people, because it is very difficult, and so
Yeah, the hills are bigger in,
yes, they are.
In Norway than they are here, but it's still a pretty darn tough. I haven't done it, I'll say that, but I have lots of friends who have done the Birkie.
Yeah.
And it's still pretty grueling, probably for us Wisconsinites.
Yeah, the principle is the same.
Right.
the principle is definitely the same. Skip, thanks so much for calling. So how does learning about your ancestry add to your life?
Well, it changed mine.
Yeah, sure did.
For sure. I mean, that was a turning point for sure. Who knows what I would be if it hadn't been for genealogy. I don't know.
Well, it's probably a little the same for you, Jerry.
I think the big thing is learning the history and what our grandparents and those before them came is, don't tell me about how hard you've got it. Don't tell me about that, because you're not going to get any sympathy. And I've drilled that into our children, and it becomes a principle with the grandchildren too, that nothing is going to be handed to you. You got to work for it.
Dana, here's an email for you, I think. Why is Norwegian geography an important part of genealogy research?
It is pretty important because Norwegians didn't have inherited surnames. So up until about 100 years ago.
Yeah.
That was not required. So their naming tradition was they had a first name, you know, like Lars or Mikkel or Ingeborg. And they would have a patronymic name. So if their father was named Knut, the sons would be Knutsen, the daughters would be Knut's daughter. And so children didn't have the same last name as their parents, unless their grandfather happened to also be Knut. If their dad was Knut Knutsen, well, then they did have the same name as their father. But it could change with every generation. And having the same patronymic name as somebody else didn't necessarily mean you were related. It just means that both of your dads were named Knut. That's all that really meant. And the last part of their name, which was more of an address. It was very common for Norwegians, if they were living on a farm, they would assume the name of the farm as their last name. So if you were living on the Grittenholm farm, you would use that like it was a last name. So you might be Lars Knutsen Grittenholm. But if you moved to the Berg farm, you would become Lars Knutsen Berg. And it didn't mean you owned the farm. It just meant you lived there. And you may have a dozen farm names in a lifetime. So knowing where your ancestors came from is really important, because you can't just go looking for Ole Olsen. You'll find one. I promise. You will find one. But it might not be your Ole Olsen. So that geography is really, really, really important to help us narrow down which Ole Olsen is your Ole Olsen.
You ever run out of work?
Not yet.
Are there ever people that... I wonder where everybody went to. We don't have anybody coming anymore. That doesn't happen.
I started a company, sales engineering company in Frankfurt, West Germany. Yeah. And one day after I was all finished with my work, and I decided I needed supper, so I go to the hotel restaurant, and the waiter struck up conversation with me and wanted to know what my name was. And I told him it was Grittenholm. And he says, that's German. I says, no, that's Norwegian. He says, no, I'm a genealogist. That's German.
It sounds Swedish to me, no offense. Yeah.
On that happy note, sit the mice this weekend, the 16th through the 18th. And visit, while you're there, visit Livsrisa. I'm sure it's open, and it's a chance to go in and see this wonderful facility. And it's great to talk. Dana Kelly, Executive Director of Norwegian American Genealogical Center, and Jerry Grittenholm, Norwegian for sure, yes, is in charge of operations at Livsrisa. It's great to have them with us. And thank you so much for joining in today as well. Our, of course, our producers, Claire Kniper, Joel Patnod, Lee Rayburn, and Jeff Robbins, our technical directors. I'm Larry Mueller, and stay with us. Lots more in store here on WPR News.